Welcome back, everybody, to the Stark Wars podcast, where we talk all things Marvel, Star Wars, and everything in between. Please take a moment to check our show notes to find our social media, merch, and more. Today, we're recapping Andor episode 13. Totally kidding, but come on, the similarities are there. We're talking The Mandalorian, The Convert, in full spoiler detail, so if you haven't seen the episode, I would get out of here. And Tommy was busy tonight, but I did bring in my favorite apostate, Devin, the reigning champ of the Stark Wars trivia tournament and one half of the Earth 894 podcast. Devin, how's it going?
Hey, man. Appreciate it. And I'll be honest. I had a quick sudden heart drop when you said Andor for a moment because I was like, wait a minute. I was like, I hope this is a prank. How's it going, man? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. I mean, come on. The similarities here. I mean, we're following, you know, very, you know, imperial type characters being seedy, and there's backstabbing. It's dark. I mean, it fits for me.
Nice. You know, this was this episode. I know we'll get into it, but it was kind of reflecting what some people were doing some criticisms for the Book of Boba Fett. In a sense. So I'm kind of curious to see how people feel about this episode.
Okay. No, that's interesting. To be honest, I haven't really gauged a lot of the, you know, general thoughts on the episode aside from myself. So I'm kind of coming in here blind. I did have good friend of the show, Robbie Freeman, had messaged me just moments before coming on saying this was an incredible episode. And that was like the one feedback I got. So Devin, I want to get your gauge, maybe not just this episode, but the start of the season as a whole, what did you think?
Yeah. So of course I've been like many people after that insanely good finale for the season two, just with Luke returning and everything, I have definitely been anticipating this show, and it's feel like it's been so long. I mean, it feels like it's been like 5 years since we've seen the Mando and everything. So, I was really stoked, man. And I got to, in San Diego for work, for a conference, and that's when the first episode dropped. So it was really cool. In my hotel room, I started the day, just watching the first episode when I was only a block away from San Diego Comic-Con, well, where it's held at, San Diego Comic-Convention Center. So it was like a spiritual viewing for me, best way to describe it. So I've been really excited for what we've seen so far.
Yeah. And I feel like we're finally like, and especially with this episode, we're like, I mean, between Bad Batch and The Mandalorian and even the sequel trilogy, I mean, Tommy and I have been talking about like, what's going on? There's a lot of stuff going on. And I feel like there's loose conduits, right? The things aren't necessarily connecting, but you can see how they will connect. And I think that's what's really interesting. And I think this episode has given us a lot. We're kind of talking about the cloning of it all, which, you know, again, this is the bell I've been ringing for a long time. I think this is the thing that's going to explain everything that happened in Rise of Skywalker, including also Grogu, and the list goes on and on. But the cloning of it all, very interesting to me.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the first things Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni said, even before, or maybe, you know, the early stages of season one of The Mando, saying like, this is going to help tie into the sequel trilogy, but mainly just how the First Order came about, right? And so I think this is the first time we've actually gotten something that felt more concrete and more of kind of like that fibrous connective tissue between the two different eras, kind of finally kind of bridging that gap as we get closer. But this episode, man, I love that it was long, at least longer. And I feel like this is a thing where you could have completely just chopped it into two separate episodes. But I think I kind of like it better as one big, like, binge watch, I guess. Because I think, you know, how people are always like, why are the episodes not as long? Like, give me 45 to an hour instead of 25 or 30, right? And 30 minutes of credits. If you were to just split the first portion in the last, like, 5 minutes of this show or this episode, you basically get one story, and then you can completely separate the other story too. So it was kind of unique that they put it in that way as a creative decision. I thought that was interesting, but at the end I was like, okay, I like where this ended. We got a lot. It was like an info dump.
Yeah. And actually, you know, I feel like of all the Disney Plus TV shows, Mando does this the best, right? I feel like it's a constant conversation on this podcast where we turn on the episode and it's like 35 minutes and we're like, you know, it's like, give us more. But I feel like Mando is so good at just packing a lot of stuff into a short amount of time. I wanted to draw one other Devin, before I spoil you, I have to ask, have you caught up with The Bad Batch?
I am not caught up. I honestly think I might be like three episodes behind. To say like it doesn't speak reflective of like the quality of the season. It's more just a time difficulty, just too many things to watch. And
I mean, you could say it's a quality thing. It won't offend me. I mean, there's a reason we're talking about The Last of Us instead of Bad Batch, after all.
Ouch.
I will say, and without spoiling you, this is very similar to something that Marvel did. Mm-hmm. Because within the same week of Hawkeye and No Way Home, we got two connections to the Daredevil universe. We got Kingpin and then Matt Murdock later on. And I just want to say, I think there's something very similar going on with The Bad Batch and The Mandalorian. I won't say exactly what, but I think it's all coming together and I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, you know, it is really nice to see that too, because like sometimes I think people are a little hesitant seeing live action crossover with animation and vice versa, but really they've been pushing the boundaries a lot on, like, I think Star Wars has probably done the best job at this so far with, you know, the Clone Wars to Rebels to everything else going on. It's cool to see stuff actually like show up the live action and be actually depicted very well. I mean, even like when Cad Bane rolled up in Book of Boba Fett, that was awesome. I think a lot of people were speculating it, but it, you know, it's not real until it actually can be seen with your eyes, and stuff like this is pretty cool to see. So it is interesting that they're actually trying to book or like actually connect these two shows simultaneously, even if it is distant in terms of time and everything when these take place. But it is still cool to see that there's like still that through line in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of the Cad Bane of it all, I feel like that kind of opened the door for so much to happen. You know, we did our cameo draft last week, and you know, at that point I was like, there's nothing's off the table anymore. You know, a lot of times we'll kind of have some wild guesses, and but at the end of the day, it's like when Cad Bane shows up, like it, literally anything can happen. So right. I'm all about it. It's a good time to be an animated Star Wars fan for sure.
That's good. You know, I will say, and I think you might, I think I already know the answer, but how do you feel about pod racing?
You know what? I like pod racing.
Okay, cool. I love pod racing. Okay. I love it. You know, Racer Revenge on PS2 and then remastered on every console since then. One of my favorite games of all time. So that one Bad Batch episode that was basically pod racing without cooler pods. I was here for it. I kind of liked it. It very much felt like a little kind of cool side quest in a video game, but I had no quarrel with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a top half Bad Batch episode for me, of that season at least.
Yeah.
Well, Devin, if you're down, we will dive in to The Convert here. And we open on basically right where we left off last week. It's Bo-Katan and Mando. She has pulled him out of the waters here. And right after seeing the Mythosaur, and I found this really interesting because, you know, I kind of thought we would like dive right into the Mythosaur. Maybe Bo-Katan would immediately tell Din what happened down there. Maybe they would go down and try to, I thought that was going to be the episode. But I think the interesting twist here is Bo-Katan is kind of questioning Din, like, what'd you see down there? And he's like, nothing. And she doesn't tell him what she saw. So what did you make of all this?
Yeah, I feel like that's also the theme of this episode. A lot of like unspoken and like kind of like mistrust to a sense, but yeah, that moment felt a little strange. But I think it really ties into the end of the episode, because I think we're going to actually see Bo-Katan really embracing the different Mandalorian, you know, cult culture that she was, you know, downplaying since season two when she was introduced to Din Djarin and everything. And I think maybe she didn't bring it up to him because she was like, she doesn't want to try and influence him, or she isn't totally convinced yet, like, oh my god, this actually happened. And if he doesn't know, he doesn't know. So it's kind of like, will he think I'm crazy, or will someone think I'm insane, or like maybe she's still processing it because a lot just happened in the course of a couple hours from what it seems like.
Yeah, you know, I've actually been really concerned about the path that Bo and Din are going down here. And actually talking last week with the Punch It Chewy podcast, they had kind of reassured me that, like, everything's going to be okay. They're going to turn out friends. You have nothing to worry about here. But I think this is another step towards, like, I have a feeling they're going to become adversaries, right? She wants the Darksaber, and now she's keeping secrets from him. Like, I just don't see this going over well between the two of them. How do you stand on the relationship between Bo and Din? Do you think it's going to come to blows?
You know, I if you asked me before I saw episode one or two of this season, I 100% would say, yeah, they're going to fight. They're going to tussle. They're going to do something. Now, I'm thinking the same kind of thing, but more in the shipping sense. I'm not going to lie. It was last thing in my cards, but I'm kind of shipping Din Djarin and Bo-Katan. It kind of makes sense in a weird way, but I think the whole point is they're trying to, you know, pull the mystery box or a ruse over us, where if you start to see like them like kindling a really strong like friendship or just something that's strong and can actually like trustworthy, and it's like, oh, things are going well. But you're right. Like at the end of the day, I think she really wants that Darksaber. And the thing that's kind of confusing me a little bit, Bo-Katan explained how the possession of the Darksaber works. Mando tried to give it back. She didn't want to take it. And then there's that whole plot hole-ish with Rebels, but whatever. But when she wielded that Darksaber against that really creepy spider device thing in the second episode, she didn't struggle in the slightest, especially compared to Din. He still is like whipping around like this heavy, heavy broadsword or something, where she made it look effortless. And so I kind of feel like it really does. Maybe there's a redemption arc for her more. Maybe this is really her path. I mean, we saw that she was redeemed, and maybe her path redemption is going to give her the confidence to regain the sword. But I don't know. I feel like the conflict for this season still hasn't really shown or like given us an indication of what the true like quote unquote big bad is going to be. But I feel like if they're really trying to focus on the Mandos, it make more of this internal like I follow them, they follow me, or something like that. But I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if at the end we really see some heartbreak here.
This is fascinating to me, Devin. It's not something that was on my radar, but you know, I made the comparisons to Game of Thrones last week with Bo-Katan and maybe taming the Mythosaur and, you know, being a Daenerys of it all. And, you know, is Din Djarin the Jon Snow? I guess time will tell. So, you know, it's not something I considered again, but I love it. I'm starting to ship it as well. So I think at the end of the day, and if you had to like put a gun to my head and say, oh, what's the conflict here? I still go back to the armor. I think the armor is the bad here. I don't trust the armor. It's something I'm probably going to rant about it every single week. I think there's going to be a Mandalorian civil war here, and Din's not. I just can't see him, you know, being her lapdog for much longer.
Yeah, and it feels like it's kind of like history keeps repeating itself with Mandalorian culture, because it's always these internal conflicts, civil wars, and, you know, destroying themselves until someone externally, the Empire, just destroyed it all. And now they're like, oh, wait, we can't go back. But I agree with the armor. Something just doesn't seem right with her. Now, she's helpful, but something is just like, what does she know? You know, because I'm not sure if this is correct, but is she the one who has been telling the rest of like the clan or the group that the like Mandalore's surface is poisonous, you can't live, you can't breathe, nothing like that? But then Bo said otherwise, and then Din, you know, confirmed it, and that was part of the thing he said to the big heavy Mando with the heavy arms and everything. I forget his name. But seeing like, wait a minute, he did it and it's legit, and armor is like, oh yeah, does the, I forget the type of little bowl water thing from Harry Potter, but it kind of reminded me of that when she like poured in the water. But it's I don't know, I feel like there's a lot of mistrust here, a lot of like defiant kind of approach is going to happen later on. I don't know how to describe it, but yeah, something's fishy.
Yeah, and to answer your question, like, this was totally fabricated by the armor. I won't accept anything else. You know, we've never heard anyone else kind of warn Mando about the surface of Mandalore besides her. Like, she kind of talks about it like it's common knowledge, but, like, you know, I'm sure the audience might correct me, but I cannot think of any other point where somebody was like, oh, of course she can't go to Mandalore. I think she's the only one ringing that drum, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, here, so we get a really interesting scene here next. This is kind of like our dog fight scene of the episode. A lot of fun. A couple tidbits here, though, to start it off. It seems like, you know, before these TIE fighter interceptors come in, Grogu does like a little babble. It's almost as if he force predicts or, you know, maybe a Jedi senses some danger coming in. And something's going on there. But yeah, this leads to a really cool fight. What did you think about this whole scene?
I will take dogfights in Star Wars any day. I love it. And, you know, going back, like, pod racing, another thing I love is Phantom Menace. And I know you have a fond appreciation for that movie, too. And, like, seeing so much N1 starfighter action, just, I love it. But I thought the dogfights were pretty cool. Yeah, I always love that type of ship that Bo-Katan is flying, that Mandalorian one, because it's just so unique and it looks very sci-fi, but also it's still like within the realm of Star Wars and design. And seeing it in this like live action kind of fight, how it maneuvers with the different wings to kind of like do the sudden like breaks and drifts and stuff like that, just really, I was like, yeah, it got me pretty pumped up and fired up. So I would love to see more kind of action like that too, but there was a lot of TIE fighters out of nowhere that just came up and just like, deuces, destroy your one droid that at your little castle on the hill.
Yeah, very Top Gun here, like kind of like you said with the wings, where she kind of throws up one wing and does like a drift turn. I was all about it, and also Mando like jumping out of the ship and like landing with his jetpack to get into the M1 starfighter. Incredible moment.
Yeah, you know, I was looking too. I'm sure it's there, but I was looking the whole time. I could not see his jetpack. And so I was waiting for him just to kind of just hit the platform and roll or something until he did that little like boost to kind of break his fall. But I couldn't really see it under his cape, or maybe just the camera angles, who knows, but it's Star Wars. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. It might've even been a creative choice where they were like, let's make people think he's in more danger. And then boom, here comes remember this? I don't know. But poor Bo-Katan. Bo-Katan loses another home here. You know, if it's not Mandalore, it's not her secondary moon castle or whatever this is. It's just such a sad story for her. She's lost her family. She's lost her home twice. She's kind of just a woman without any land here. And, I don't know what that informs for the future of this character, but I do feel bad for her.
Yeah, and you know, I just kind of what your point earlier was about, like, the armor and just everything like that. I'm kind of wondering if maybe Bo-Katan is the reason why there's this kind of internal like civil war within that small group, because now she's been on the outside. She's redeemed. She's accepted. So now she's respected. They do that little almost like baptism communion kind of like, hey, everyone, welcome to the fam, you know, at church or something. Pat her on the shoulder. And she even flinches for a second, too. If you see like the first person that approaches her on her right to tap shoulder for the first time, she has this little like sudden just movement. And I think it was definitely showing like she can finally let her guard down a little bit, especially being like, you know, weird type of environment, whatever. But I wonder if this is going to be her path of like, okay, I know what's out there. I've been in the waters. I've done this. And she tries to like spread the word. And then she kind of changes the philosophy of the other people in the group. And then maybe the armor is going to be like, whoa, hold up. Wait a minute. This is my circus. For you, and then maybe that's where it comes like true believers versus true, I don't know, eaters want to eat out of there.
Yeah, here's my thought process now, though. At this point, Bo-Katan is bad luck, and I love Bo-Katan, don't get me wrong. It feels like everybody that Bo-Katan surrounds herself with has an untimely fate, I can see a place where she kind of becomes more comfortable with the situation she's in, but I see rocky roads ahead for her, and I don't think it stops here.
Yeah, and you know, one thing I was kind of expecting, since she had Grogu in her ship and she was the one who's pretty pissed after they bombed everything, and she goes after that big fleet, Mando's trying to tell her, like, no, stop, stop. I was surprised he didn't say, like, you have the child, or like, you have Grogu or something. Cause then it's like, no, you have my kid and you're the one going to danger. And I'm going to personally jump in there, steal him and dip or something. So I was kind of waiting for that to give like a little bit of like, you were reckless. You should know better. but he didn't really kind of criticize her after they landed safely back at the other planet.
Yeah, you don't think he was worried about R5 and the
did you read the the Star Wars A New Hope from a Certain Point of View book?
I did not, but I would love to one day.
Just listen to like the audiobook, random segments, but there's a one little chapter that's all about R2 and R5 at the moment when R5's motivator breaks because he's trying to help R2-D2 get to Luke, and it's literally like R5 is the reason why the rebellion was able to succeed. It's pretty funny, but it's just like this one droid, man, from like 20 seconds of screen time is now in these episodes. He's getting more figures, he's getting more screen time. It's like, to your point, I know you'll like this. Jar Jar, when is he coming back?
It's a matter of time, baby. I mean, if we're doing R5 at this point,
right?
Yeah,
where's Kitster?
Yeah, what's his name, Dexter, dude from the Attack of the Clones. A lot of lingering threads out there, and it's Star Wars. If we keep at this rate, they're all coming back. So I want to dive in here to kind of the bulk of the episode, where we catch up with Dr. Pershing, who is giving a speech on Coruscant. And he's talking about a lot of different things. He's talking about the amnesty program. He tells this sob story about his mother and how cloning could have saved her. And he's kind of embraced here. A lot of the people in this conference hall. I don't know what it is. It's not quite the Senate, yeah, but similar to it. But they all embrace him. It's kind of like touching that he kind of feels like he finally has a home here. What did you think? Like, it was kind of jarring to me to realize that this is going to be a Dr. Pershing episode. Like, it's somebody that, like, again, I've had a lot of stake in, like, the cloning of Star Wars and where that's going. But I don't know that I would have bet that Dr. Pershing would be such a big character in the season.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just it's bringing more characters into the forefront, which sometimes that can be a sign of, like, what are they doing this season? Are we in good shape or what's going on? However, I think it is still pretty valuable because, like, if you really want to connect the whole Snoke of it all, maybe this is really going to be the reason why. And so the whole fact of what his desire is, he wants to continue his research. He does seem like he really was a guy who just wanted to do good, and he tried to pursue the opportunities that would help him do what he wants to do, but he wasn't trying to be all like evil mad scientist. At least maybe, I don't know. The whole thing is, I'm still trying to wrap my head around what is really the perspective that we should see as the truth, you know, with what he's saying about trying to get his stuff back. And then what happens with Tim at the end of the episode, pretty like Twilight Zone, Dark Mirror-esque, with Alaya Kane kind of, you know, turning her back on him. But it's very interesting that, you know, again, another character who is seen in one episode for just a couple minutes, and now they get this whole episode together. So it's cool. It's just, I was very like sci-fi thriller, Blade Runner for a moment with the train and everything and the soundtrack. So it's definitely some new territories we're exploring here.
Yeah, it's and honestly, we'll kind of get to the end of the episode here a little later more deeply, but honestly, I'm very confused about what's going on. I have a lot of questions, but I guess I'm supposed to at this point. But let's talk about, it's interesting because, okay, so he ends up getting in this taxi with this robot, and there's a lot of conversation here. I love this robot, the taxi robot. He's talking about the botanical gardens and museums and all this great things. But he's almost like, I don't know if you played Grand Theft Auto, but he's almost like or Red Dead Redemption, any Rockstar game, where you're like driving or galloping to a location and the character you're with is having a conversation with you. But depending on how quickly you get to the location, the conversation will just cut off. And they'll be like, we've arrived. And that's exactly what this robot did. And I was like, this is such an NPC. I had a good time with this robot.
Right. And my favorite part was when the robot turns his head or its head back at Pershing, and Pershing like does this little nudge like, hey, eyes on the road. It's like, does he really need to see?
Yeah, why have eyes at that point if like you're not gonna use them?
Yeah, it just cracked me up seeing that. But it's funny. So I had a webinar today that was all about using AI, ChatGPT, and everything for association marketing, what the field I'm in. And a lot of people are very paranoid, very Skynet about AI. I don't blame them, but also different crowd and age and yada yada, we'll get into. But I just think it's funny how whenever it comes to like AI and Star Wars, are just how droids act. And droids are just like very spunky, have their own like kind of quirky personality, stuff like this in the car. And it's like, oh yeah, no, technically that's kind of AI, except it's kind of just a bumbling idiot, just wants a friend. Like it's like nothing too terrifying from the quote unquote sci-fi of it all. So I always like to just be like, yeah, let's be realistic. It's probably more like that, guys.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Like, I feel like there's two types of Star Wars. There's like the creatures of Star Wars, which you get your mythosaurs and your rancors and all this great stuff. We deal with this kind of stuff a lot in The Mandalorian specifically. But then there's also the droid side of Star Wars. And I realize I think I'm more of a droid fan than I am of the creatures. I love all the droids. Like, it's always my favorite thing. Like, I know a lot of people like, you know, watching Bad Batch, you know, not to spoil again too much, but there's some kaiju stuff going on there, a lot of big monsters. And for me, like, I always seem to have more fun with the droids. I don't know if I'm alone in that.
No, I kind of echo that sentiment, because sometimes when the monsters or the creatures that we get just really look like something like out of claymation 1950s kind of movies, I know that's the stuff that inspired Star Wars, a lot of what like Phil Tippett pulled from with his models and stuff like that, but it does kind of take me out of it a little too much. It's like whenever they try and really find anything unused from Ralph McQuarrie just to throw in there, great art, it's just sometimes it's like, okay, I know what you're doing, we see you, we get it. But the droids are like where you can really have the most fun, and sometimes like the droids don't really hit the mark. But a lot of the droids that we've gotten in all the movies and shows lately that are like the standout ones are awesome. I mean, like K2SO, awesome. Even little BMO, that poor guy, man, from Andor. I just hope that guy gets, you know, like the golden heaven for droids, because that guy just, he's just so emo and sad.
So mistreated in that, like, if you go back and watch, like, anybody listening to this, next time you go do an Andor rewatch, just pay attention to his story arc. There's nothing good about it, including, like, the good guys aren't nice to him. Like, nobody's nice to B2 Emo. And, yeah. Like, even, like, when he's doing the great thing where he's, like, sharing the speech in front of everybody, he still kind of gets knocked over, dragged off, yeah. And that's like the last we see of him. It's like, there's nothing, it's just, he's doomed for a horrible existence. And I'm very much of the Solo mindset that the justice for the droids, we need some equality here.
That was a good moment in Solo when all the droids are starting to repel and you see like a gonk droid just like slowly stomping its feet on the console. Like, that's funny. Come on.
Yeah. It's great. So we end up here with some of the other Amnesty folks, and they're kind of sharing a lot of different things. The big thing that stuck out to me is they believe Moff Gideon has escaped. So, you know, if we're talking big bads here, I definitely think we'll see our good buddy Moff Gideon again soon.
Yeah, and that's, I was glad they kind of did this early on, too, because now you're getting it from the actual source, right? It's from the people who actually served underneath him and were part of the Empire, versus just like some chatter between like some rebel officers or something. And that's what I really like. This is really a fascinating piece for me, because I love that we got Coruscant back. Seeing it just as like in its full capacity, like you see all the towers, you see the Senate, you see the everything. I literally felt transported back to watching like Attack of the Clones or Revenge of the Sith. It looked like it was still the same kind of like quality CGI in the best way possible. It didn't really feel like they were in just a virtual space as much. Like, I really loved it. And now seeing this whole part where they have like reintegration with, you know, the Empire soldiers, what do you do? There's so many of them. And a lot of the people, like, they were drafted, they were recruited, they volunteered, but a lot of them, you know, they're talking in this episode, a lot of them really want to do better things. But I definitely see the point where it's possible that a lot of them really are brainwashed, which is very, very morally gray for the New Republic, because these guys that Pershing is introduced to, they all seem like, oh, no, not like that. No, this. No, the good stuff. Well, you know, like that and that. They kind of seem a little too happy and upbeat. I mean, maybe they are really relieved, but I don't know. Maybe they've gotten a little too many zaps to the brain, and now they're just kind of a little fluttery in that sense.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think, teasing some of the end of the episode here, it's almost like, you know, it's very similar to, I don't want to get too political here, but I think you can see a lot of similarities between two sides of the American politics system and how, you know, one thing might seem great, but it's very similar to the other thing as well. I already am seeing the flaws in this new republic. So that's going to be something interesting to watch here. And I will say it's really what I loved about seeing Coruscant here. And what I realized is we haven't actually seen Coruscant since, and maybe I'm completely off here, I'm pretty sure we haven't seen Coruscant since Revenge of the Sith that wasn't under Imperial control. We see it in Andor, we see it in Bad Batch, and the difference in between what we're seeing here in Revenge of the Sith is, and compared to Andor, there's lights, it's bright, it's fun, there's fairs, there's fun stuff going on. That's the good. You go to Coruscant, it's dark and dreary in Andor, and here it's like full of life again, and like it's kind of my Coruscant again. So like, again, we have seen Coruscant in a lot of ways, but we haven't seen it like this in a long time. And that was something that made me very happy.
Yeah, man. It like I said, it's just so cool to see Coruscant back again. And it just kind of really makes me wish we got Trevorrow's Star Wars Episode 9 a bit, because it had a lot to do with Coruscant really hitting it home. That movie's still going to probably be weird. I'll be honest.
Don't even like to talk about it because it hurts me, because I love that concept so much.
Right, exactly. So it's cool, but I'm also really relieved that JJ was the one who actually wanted to destroy Coruscant with Starkiller Base instead of Hosnian Prime, and that's why they substituted a very similar city, you know, as a kind of a scapegoat. Because I think Lucasfilm was like, no, you're not destroying that city. That would have been a really bad idea. And I'm really glad they didn't.
Yeah. And that's the cool thing about these planets is they kind of come characters of their own. Again, it's just like a cameo for me seeing certain locations. So I want to get your takes here. We've talked about it a little bit, but Aaliyah Kane, which this was pointed out to me. I watched Heavy Spoilers on YouTube. I found this very funny that the name is very, you know, sinister, and that the name is Aaliyah as in I lie and Kane as in Cain and Abel. So I feel like the name in and of itself has a lot of like backstabbing to it. But what I found really interesting is, I don't know if you picked up on this, but this is the warrior chick from Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, which I loved her in that role. And I love her in this role as well. So what did you think about Aaliyah Kane?
Yeah, that's the funny thing. I was like, wow. Gentora's here from Ant-Man. I knew something was weird about her from the moment she sat down, because I mean, they give the clues right away. But the funny thing is, and I'm not gonna take credit for this because I saw it on a Reddit thing earlier today and I thought it was so funny, I had to share, but when they're eating those like weird fluorescent popsicles at that little space,
photon fizzles, I believe they're called.
Photon fizzles. Now that's
any good listener, we love the food here on Sark Wars, so I definitely wrote that one down.
Give it 6 months and you'll see the Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, if you notice, Pershing's is blue. Hers is red. And the Reddit post is like, even Sith bleed the proton fizzles to make them red. So it's like it's like a Sith version of a popsicle. So I thought that was just so funny.
That's hilarious. And I think that's the kind of thing, it's like a lot of the stuff in this episode is very on the nose, but like that's kind of Star Wars to me. And, you know, it's not something you would have gotten in Andor, but like this seems like the much more like, you know, the circus version of Star Wars. And, you know, it's stuff like that. That's like,
yeah,
it's so cheesy, but it works for me. She ends up daring him to touch, and this is another thing I really like seeing. There's like, they have like this circular structure around this mountain peak, which I really like, because it kind of goes to show that, you know, if you know from like the legends of it all, Coruscant is basically built on top of a planet, right? And you know, if you know about the rumor or the canceled game Star Wars 1313, as well as some of the stuff we got in the last season of Clone Wars, Coruscant is not just the surface. There's like deep underground cities below there, and I just thought it was interesting they focused on like it was a mountain peak, and that kind of just goes to show you how big Coruscant is and how layered it is. But there is a cute little scene here where she kind of tempts him to touch the mountain peak, and the droid comes after him, which again, another very much on the nose, like, you know, I'm not always telling you the truth.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's kind of just like showing him this guy who had to, it sounds like Pershing's life required him to really grow up on his own pretty fast. And he didn't really get a lot of those like kind of adolescent just hijinks, right? Like, ooh, can I touch it? Yeah, go touch it. And it's like, no, don't touch it. And it's like, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. And here is this man who's probably like in his 40s or something. Clearly an adult. So it was kind of funny to see that. But I really was hoping that he would like, you know, peek over the edge a little bit and you could actually see down to see like how far does it go, if you can even see anything. Because I thought that really was really cool too. Like, hey, this is actually part of the planet, but don't touch it.
Yeah. So they have some conversation here. Elia is kind of like planting some seeds in his head about like going back to his cloning and whatnot. But this kind of leads up to a couple different things. She ends up bringing him the travel biscuits that he said that he missed. And he kind of comes back to her and he's like, all right, let's do this. We're doing it. Let's go get this mobile station from wherever. And they're off on the train.
Clickety clack on the track.
Yes. A lot there's like interesting characters here. They talk about Tongues Day, which I believe Tongues Day is in reference to the first race of Mandalorians. And I don't know what that, like, I'm kind of confused about, like, I didn't realize there were like days of the week in Star Wars. So like, I want to know what all of them are and what they all mean. So I don't know. It's be interesting.
That's always the fun thing. It's like, how did they age? How do they count time? How do they tell years? Like, it's all that fun stuff where I feel like no matter how people try and explain it, same with like parsecs, it never makes sense. We just like the terms. It's fine as is.
Yeah, exactly. But they end up, there's the ticket people coming to collect tickets and they have to, elude them, and they jump off the train here and they end up at the scrapyard with a Star Destroyer. And this is where they're going to get their little mobile lab. I thought this was really interesting. Honestly, I had a lot of expectations about what this could mean. I think my big one was like, you know, are we getting Thrawn here? You know, the implications of like this abandoned Star Destroyer with, you know, when we get there, it starts to seem like there's people aboard. So it was not any of those things, but it had me thinking in the moment.
Yeah. And that's where it comes back to like, what is Elia's deal here? Like, is she a double agent? Is she actually on the side of the rebellion? Is she working to pretend like she is? And she actually is maybe trying to help like the Emperor or, you know, the First Order rain again? Like, I don't know. But the one misdirect that I had was when you see these like little rumblings and everything, I thought we're gonna get our creature of the week right here, because they had that little like orange fluorescent kind of beetle looking bug that they show right when they're like, what was that? No, let's keep going. And that's when I thought like, uh-oh, they're gonna be running from a big ass like bug or something, like infection. It gets like zombie kind of weird for a second. But no, it was actually, I assume, like I said, either it's people on the ship still, or it's just the people coming to arrest them, and that's what they hear. But I don't know. It's very strange. Night. I have a feeling the next episode isn't going to give us more answers to this story. We're not going to get it until like a few more episodes down the road, which they've kind of done in the past, and it's kind of like a storytelling trope, I guess, because they want you to like really sink your teeth into like, hang on, because you're like, I want to know. And it got me. I really want to know what her deal is. And like, I'm trying to think of the comparison of someone who lured someone who is naive, like befriended them, lured them to do something, and completely did a 180, backstabbed them, and then just kind of screwed the other person over. because it happened very well in something else, but I can't remember what it was. But a lot of like double crossing here, which is pretty cool.
I mean, we know Star Wars rhymes, so there's got to be something out there that hints to this. But you're right. We'll even talk. I'll go to this scene where she ends up hooking up to the Mind Flayer, which is not the thing from Stranger Things. It seems to be some sort of torture device, it's supposed to reacclimate him in some way. But they're like, listen, we keep it on a low voltage. There's nothing to worry about. And then she ends up, like, when everyone walks away, she ends up turning up the voltage on him and basically torturing him. And I'm like, I'm like at a complete loss. Are they trying to like wipe his mind from like the things that he knows? Mm-hmm. Is she just vindictive and doesn't, is she trying to kill it? Like, I have so many questions, about, Aaliyah and her motivations here that I don't even know where to begin.
I feel it's strange, but I think to kind of poke holes in my own theory, I guess if she was actually part of this group and like he did actually relapse or something, I feel like more people would have been present and handled that kind of readjustment with whatever the Flair was doing, and not her being very conspicuous and wait till everyone leaves and then she's like, oh, let's turn into 11 and just crank that up and just wipe them up. I think it'd be different. So that's why I think more of this, like, she's probably trying to cover her tracks because she explained first to everyone else. No one believed her. She didn't say a word and no one addressed her either when the spotlight is on them with that ship or patrol, whatever. So I was hoping we'd get something officer, blah, 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 or who she is, but we didn't. So something's up here. Something's funky.
Yeah. I think we just have to put a pin on it and see what they tell us later on, because it's a lot. We close the episode here with Bo and Din going back to, I wrote cult in my notes. I will continue to write cult. They are a cult. I don't trust them. But Paz Vizsla is here. He's like, you're an apostate. You're a night owl. You guys aren't coming in. But they're like, hey, we swam in the living waters. Let us prove ourselves. And Den has some sample of the water. They go in, they test it. It is the living waters, and they are welcome back in. Congrats, guys.
That was easy.
Yeah, again, don't trust these guys still. I don't like it. I think even Bo is not on board for any of this. She's even like, I don't even believe what you guys believe in. And they're like, well, you didn't take your helmet off, so you're one of us until then.
Yeah, it's like, oh, okay, cool. You know, I kind of wonder, like, the living water, do you think you can actually drink it? Is it safe? Does it give you powers? Because it gets a little cloudy and misty when she, like, tests it. And is that a good thing? Is that sanitary? Or is it, like, you drink it and it's, like, almost like the heart-shaped herb from Black Panther? Does it give you, like, the power of the panther? Does it do something like that? Does it superpower boost you? I don't know.
Yeah, see, I feel like if it did, that would be the tradition, is to drink it, not necessarily swim in it. I actually have it's not water. They call it living waters, but like clearly this is something else. And if it's not good, it has to be bad to drink. So I probably wouldn't, I don't know that I would test it.
And think about like all the, we saw the Mythosaur in there, and who knows what else. And that water has been dusty and down there and dank and damp, and imagine what kind of nasty stuff is just floating around there.
Mythosaur pee, all that good stuff.
Yeah. And I thought they smelled worse on the outside.
Ding. Okay, Devin, that is the end of the episode here. Do you have any final thoughts about the episode or predictions going forward? Anything else on The Mandalorian here?
You know, I will say the last thing I'm going to put in the realm of this Aaliyah Kane lady, if I remember, on Moff Gideon's ship, there was some type of cloning there. Or am I confusing with Kenobi? Were there those?
So it was actually an Imperial base they ended up infiltrating, and they found some tubes that. The leading theory is they were Snoke clones, but it's not necessarily confirmed.
And that's what I was wondering, because if it was on Gideon's ship or something like that, then that would make me feel like, okay, he probably did have some people who really believed in him and followed him. And if you're on the command deck, maybe you were pretty close to Gideon taking orders and everything, that you're starting to drink the Kool-Aid. And that's why I think maybe this is her trying to maybe actually track down Gideon. And she's going to take this lab and she's going to try and get what's going and then keep it under his control. And, you know, they do it their like glory to the Empire and Sidious's plan, because, you know, he has a million of them just lying around, apparently. So I think we're going to get some more. But Pershing himself, I kind of wonder if he's done now, because that looks pretty intense.
It again, like, her goal is either, I would have to imagine her goal is to either kill him or wipe his mind. And either tells me that he's probably no longer relevant to the story. So
R.I.P.
I'll miss you, Dr. Pershing. And it's so sad because he did finally feel like he was at peace a little bit. He felt validated. And just like that, he's out the door. So,
and did he even get to try one of those yellow biscuits he really was craving?
So we actually skipped over some of this because I didn't have anything to say about it. But like, you do see him at his like workstation, and he does take a bite of the biscuit.
Okay, at least got to enjoy one or two before he can't really remember why he liked him.
Yeah. Okay, so I did tease you here. I have a game, and for the uninitiated that are listening here, you have been doing an incredible project this month of March, the Multiverse of March Madness. Do you want to tell people what that's about real quick?
Yeah, thanks, man. So Louie and I at our podcast, so we're all pretty much MCU Marvel in related stuff. And so we had this idea last year that we threw together the Multiverse of March Madness tournament, where basically 64 bracket tournament. We took 32 heroes, 32 villains, paired them all together in these really cool seedings that Louis is a mastermind behind. I don't understand how he does it, but we did that, and we just had a bunch of people vote with all our matchups for like 2 weeks that month, and we eventually got one winner for the villains and the heroes, and then we had them vote against each other, and basically Doctor Strange won it all, which is crazy because it was right before Multiverse of Madness. So now we're doing it for the second time, and we're a little bit more prepared this time around. So we're doing it all on phase four heroes and villains. So that's why if you look at our bracket on our website, you won't really see like, where's Iron Man? Where's like Steve Rogers? We have Captain America. We have Black Panther, but it's the Shuri version. It's the Sam Wilson version. And so we're just started the first day of round two. So now we're getting where people are actually voted. And this is where the competition gets a little bit more spicy and interesting. But yeah, we're doing it all the way up until 31st of March, and you can actually make your own bracket, and all you have to do is post it, tag it, or email it to us, and we'll enter you in for a movie theater gift card that we're giving away on the last day. So it's been a really fun time so far.
So I have a couple questions here. My first one is, like, I'm gonna poke the mastermind's brain here, because thus far, this has been a yearly event. What does next year look like? Can we get a tease? Ooh. You had to have thought about this, right? Because you've already done like MCU as a whole, but now you're doing phase four. Are you just going to do, is it 2023 heroes and villains next year? How does that look?
Yeah, you know, I think it depends on how many Kang variants we get before next March, because we've just been talking about like, same for Skrulls. Because now it's like, if we get, let's say, I don't know, five different characters, we find out have been Skrulls the whole time in Secret Invasion. Well, what do we do next? And so we're going to hopefully get a lot of more like variations and everything now that we're in phase five. I think the three movies we're getting this year, I think we'll hopefully flush that out. But the thing we definitely want to do for next year is find more of a way to do an actual point system. This year we were trying to test out, how can we make brackets? How can we make it so people can participate? But we really want to really get into like that true like fantasy draft competition and stuff like that. And it's kind of like a learning curve. So the more people that participate and the more people who give us feedback at the end too, that's just only going to make it better for next year. But it is so much fun. And I think next year we might actually try and do a movie version, so we can find out truly what is the best movie out of the MCU.
Oh, okay. I like that tease. Yeah. So my next question is here, because having listened to the podcast and kind of getting, there's a lot of different ways you can go about doing the draft or the bracket, right? It could be your favorites. It could be who you think would win in a fight. Or it could be you guys talk about the trolls a lot. So Devin, let me ask you, when you're filling out the bracket, what is your criteria?
Yeah, my criteria is a little bit twofold. I think about, how much do I like this character? And then how much, I perceive how would the fight actually go in my head. For example, when we get Scarlet Witch versus who is she up against today? But she's like against like Ravonna, Renslayer, and Miss Minutes. Either way, it's a weird pairing, but Scarlet Witch is gonna demolish, and so it's an easy vote for me. But then you get really cool stuff like when we had Hawkeye versus Yelena. Now, one thing we've got more with this year's tournament is we've actually had a lot of matchups so far that actually played out on screen. And so it makes it challenging for everyone in the fold, because we don't really try and influence people saying like, oh, it's this version of this character with this power set. It's open to interpretation. That's where it's more fun. So when you get this matchup, it's like last year, the hero side, the finals to decide between Strange was with Wanda. She wasn't Scarlet Witch at that point yet, because it was, you know, still before all Multiverse of Madness. But now she's on the villain side. So now if we get them in the finals again, how do you go about voting? Is it because we literally saw like she kind of lost in that movie, but we know she's pretty BA? Like, can Strange beat her again? Is it popularity? Is it real? And that's what it gets the most fun. And so that's what this tournament is really shaping up to be so far.
All right. And the reason I ask is because to get to my game, I have a bracket for you.
Ooh.
We're going to do here of I'm Mandalorian excited. Characters.
Nice.
And listen, I am no Louis Cedar, right? I came up with 8 names and, I didn't pay attention to the seating at all. So
all good,
I'm just going to leave it up to you. And you get the sole choice here. Whoever you think deserves to move on for whatever reason, it is up to you. All right. You ready to begin?
I'm ready, man.
Our first matchup here is Ahsoka versus Bo-Katan.
Ooh. Oh, man. See, this is the stuff I love. I am definitely going to go Ahsoka, because she ain't no Jedi, but she knows how to handle those lightsabers and the Force. They got some history, so it's going to be an awesome fight. But I think at the end of the day, Bo-Katan can't overpower Ahsoka. Hands down, Ahsoka wins.
Yeah. I think that might be the most obvious giveaway. Well, actually, there's one other that I think is pretty obvious. But I'm with you, Ahsoka, all the way. Nice. So Ahsoka will move on to the final four. Our next matchup is Grogu versus IG-11.
Oh, man. Ooh.
I think this one's a little tough.
Yeah, you know, because like Grogu, he's got the Force. He knows a little bit more now with what he trained with Luke. But when we saw IG is that creepy, just half version of himself, Grogu was pretty scared, and Din was missing every shot in the book for once. I think.
Don't worry, people will only judge you very hard for this choice.
Oh, man. I feel like I'm wrong in saying this, but I'm going to go Grogu, because I think at the end of the day, Grogu, if it comes down to it, that little sucker is just going to force crunch and just throw IG-11 away.
I think I'm with you. Yeah. As much as I love IG-11, which is why he ended up here, even though he's not the biggest Mando character. This one might be another gimme. We'll see what you think. It is Mando versus Moff Gideon.
Ooh. See, I was afraid when you said Grogu, you're going to say Grogu versus Mando and just throw that into the
well. Well, depending on how this goes, we might get there.
Oh, man. So Moff Gideon versus Din Djarin. They had a pretty good fight, honestly, before he lost the Darksaber to Din. So I'm going to go Mando. I mean, he's beat him before. He'll do it again. But if this is my bold prediction, when Moff Gideon shows up again, he's going to be like the Maul setup. He's got, for no reason, and I hope they don't explain it, he's got like spider legs, or he's got like the crazy Maul, like hydraulic robotic legs. And just his torso, and he's just like beefed up, and he's doing all these scissor kicks and stuff for no reason. It's unnecessary, but I'd love to see it.
Yeah. He needs to be a little more daunting. His matchups aren't totally this first round. We'll get to the second round's gonna be hard.
It's always the first round.
Yeah. So let's go to the next one here. Another one I feel like a gimme, but you might surprise me, and I'll welcome it. It is Boba Fett versus Luke Skywalker.
Oh man, that just made me think of like the really like iconic arcade game with the OT, and you had to play the little bonus mission against Boba Fett with the lightsaber, and oh man. Oh god. Hand-to-hand combat, no Force, I say Boba Fett wins. But in realistic fighting standards, it's got to be Luke, man.
I mean, look, after I put them together, I realized that technically they've gone toe-to-toe in Return of the Jedi, and Luke basically accidentally kills Boba Fett. So yep. If he could do it on accident, you think he'd be able to do it on purpose.
Now, if it was a race on Banthas, Boba, 100%.
All day. Okay, let's go to round two here. Our first two winners here. Ahsoka versus Grogu. This is a sad fight.
Oh, no. This is where the pain starts. Okay. So Grogu's got a little dark side in him. We've seen it. And no one's really given him that moral compass other than Luke a little bit. Din's kind of like, hey, stop being annoying. But I don't know. But Ahsoka's gray, man. She's seen the good, she's seen the bad, but she's probably a little bit more self-reserved. But I think at the end of the day, Ahsoka will do what's necessary. That's where I think that gray side really comes in. So if they had to fight, and if she had to put that little sucker down, I think she would. So I'm going to go with Grogu as Ken in the boot.
Yeah, I think that's the right choice. Poor guy. Poor little severed baby here. We'll go on to the next matchup here, which is Mando versus Luke Skywalker.
Oh, man. I feel like this is so easy. I'm just going to say Luke. But yeah. It's just because, like, Din, even if he's using the Darksaber, so it's a saber versus saber fight, Din is still like struggling to take it over and actually like be able to not let the sword control him. And So Luke would just do a little force push, get the saber, do the cool little choppy chop, and that Beskar is gonna be best gone.
Well said. Okay, now finally a difficult conversation we're about to have here. This is the final round. It's Ahsoka versus Luke Skywalker. And this is, you know, I've agreed with you every step of the way, but I feel like no matter what you say here, you're wrong. But I'd love to hear what you have to say.
First off, I want to see this fight. For what, yes. Even if it's just a spar, I want to see it. But, okay, so going off of the Mando time, this is Luke Skywalker when he's pretty much still in his prime. Right after Return of the Jedi, a couple of years, you know, distant from it. But he's still young. He's fighting. Ahsoka's still like, she's gray, man, but I don't know if that's really gonna overpower. I don't know. I feel like it's not unfair to say that Ahsoka probably has more combat experience because of the Clone Wars growing up, and plus the fighting style. I mean, she's got two sabers and this really cool, funky style, so she might honestly be the better just saber duelist compared to Luke. But mastery of the Force, that's also kind of that's also a good question. I mean, just because he's a Skywalker, maybe he can overpower her. I don't know. But I think if this is a straight up saber duel, I think I might have to say Ahsoka.
Yeah, again, you're wrong. But I also kind of agree. So
yeah,
Ahsoka has like official Jedi training as well.
Right.
You know, Luke's kind of like secondhand here a little bit. He got some, I guess, official training. And then he was kind of on his own for a long time. So
right. He's on his own.
Yeah, not a bad choice there. Ahsoka is the winner of the Mando bracket, and thank you for humoring me through that.
Of course, man, that was fun. Thanks for putting that together.
Of course. So I also do you have any recommendation, whether it be a movie, TV show, book, app, activity, anything you want to leave the audience with that you've been doing?
Oh, man, yeah, actually, so. You know, sometimes it's good to get a little bit out of the pop culture, out of Star Wars, out of Marvel, out of whatever you're watching, and just kind of watch something that's kind of like a palate cleanser or something nice to kind of just separate yourself from it. If you have Apple TV Plus, or just find a subscription, they hand them out like candy. Watch the show Shrinking with Jason Segel and Harrison Ford. It is a really good show. I mean, it's I won't go into spoilers. I think it's the final episode just dropped today, actually. But it's basically a guy who's a therapist. He's trying to go something like he's trying to go through a really difficult time in his life. And it's kind of interesting to see like how he uses that to help his patients and in kind of traditional way. But it's got heart. It's got funny. And it's got the same writers, I believe, from Ted Lasso. So if you love that show, you're going to really love this. So I highly recommend that show.
Here's my problem. There's so many. I lie. Severance is on Apple TV Plus, but there's so many other Apple TV Plus shows I haven't watched that I need to get to. So that's joining the very long list.
Yeah, it's Apple TV seems to have like the hidden gems. Like every time I go on there, there's more and more things that I see that I'm like, wow, this is really cool. How is no one talking about this? How do I see no marketing on this? But that's what Shrinking was. I saw those two guys together and I was like, sign me up.
Yeah. It's rare to see like Harrison Ford in anything really. That's not like a reboot of something else that he's done. So.
Dude. And honestly, he steals the show. And the scenes that he's in, it's because he's Jason Segel's boss. He's like the head clinician. And it's just funny because it's this old grumpy man as a therapist who's kind of woke. But it's just like he's just funny. You got to watch it. It's just he's Harrison Ford in the show. And it's so great.
All right. Well, I will recommend something here. And as we know, and like has been a theme on this podcast for the past couple of weeks, we've talked a lot about reality TV. And I've started a new one, and I actually only watched one episode, but I've heard great things, and it was pretty good to start. Check out Outlast on Netflix, which is kind of a combination between Alone and Survivor. Basically, a bunch of people are dropped off in the Alaskan wilderness, and they have to survive in teams. And, you know, again, things haven't heated up too much from where I'm at, but I have heard it gets heated, and there's some... what I've heard is it has some of the greatest reality TV villains of all time. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, check that out. I will be doing it as well. So
that's cool. Can I throw one more recommendation out there?
Please.
If you guys have not seen RRR, it's on Netflix. It's 3 hours. That movie, absolutely incredible.
My number one movie of last year by far. It's so good.
So good.
And it's got literally everything you could want in it.
I know, friendship, love, action, drama, like everything, and it's
dance
so
scenes.
Good.
It's everything.
Yeah, and I will say I fully will go on record saying that I think it's done a better job at being a comic book movie than some of the last several Marvel movies we've gotten. It did a better job at embracing the comic kind of flair when it comes to action and the absurdity, but they did it in a good way that didn't just feel like straight Bollywood or just like, what the heck are they even doing? But it was just like, wow, I almost forgot. It's kind of unrealistic that they can do this fighting sequence that they're doing, but I was captivated, and it is so damn good. So do yourself a favor, rainy day next time, watch it.
Yeah, and I think that's what I've been telling people whenever I talk about this movie. It's like, nothing in this movie is impossible, but if it were to happen, it would be like the greatest thing to ever happen in history. So if that sounds appealing to you.
Exactly.
Yeah, like I won't spoil too much, but the bridge scene, like, technically that could happen.
Yep.
But it probably never would. So
not at all.
Good recommendation there. And again, Devin, I want to give you the chance to again tell people where they can find you online and the podcast and whatever else you want to plug.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much again for having me on, man. It's always a blast being able to talk about the wars. Love it. So if you guys
sorry, let me interrupt. I just realized I've only had you on for Star Wars.
Oh, true.
And you're like the Marvel guy, so we'll have to fix that in the future. I'll make sure the next one is something Marvel related.
Anytime, man, and likewise. But basically, if you guys want to listen to some Marvel content, check us out, Earth894 Marvel Pod. Earth894 Pod on pretty much every social media handle out there. If you guys want to check out our website, earth894podcast.com/MOMM, mom with two M's at the end. That's where you can get everything. It's our central hub this year for the tournament, and you can download your bracket. You can see the live stats and scores on all of our current results and matchups, as well as do little votes that we have there, frequently updated with stuff. So if you don't have like an Instagram or if you don't have a TikTok where we do this stuff for the polls, you can actually go in. We have a little Google form. It's mobile friendly. You can vote there. If you don't have to sign in, just do it. Done. Great time. But yeah, go ahead and check us out.
Cool. All right. Again, thank you so much for doing this. I'm going to close this out here. I'd like to remind you guys to rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify, preferably 5 stars. Also, please subscribe because we're going to be here every single week with Mandalorian coverage. There's a lot of stuff coming up here. We're going to do I know we haven't been doing the week to week on Bad Batch, but we will close out the season with a podcast. And there's other stuff coming up. So, you know, you won't know unless you hit subscribe and it'll like pop up on your phone as a notification, automatically download. It's so convenient. It helps you and it helps me. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Stark Wars Pod. And also, we have a little Discord community going on. So if that's something you're interested in, you can hit us up and we will get you in there. But that is all we got for you guys. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye.